Our reading for this morning is taken from Isaiah in chapter 6. I have to tell you that this is one of my favourite readings. And if you read it in the very old version, what do we call it, King James Version, it says in verse 5, "Woe to me, I am undone." Isn't that interesting? So we read Isaiah 6, verse 1 to 8. "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphs, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, 'Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory.' At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and the threshold shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. 'Woe to me,' I cried, 'I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty.' Then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin is atoned for.' Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here am I. Send me.' This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God."
Good morning, everybody. I wanted to begin by saying a big thank you to everybody for your concern and prayers. Last week, I got a sickness bug about 2 a.m. on Sunday morning. It's like the worst time for a vicar to get a sickness bug, isn't it? And Lucy, my daughter, had it before me. And then I got it. I thought everyone in the family was going to get it, but thankfully it stopped with me, no more. So I was in bed on Sunday morning. But so I wanted to thank you for your prayers and all your kind words. I also wanted to thank you for, and particularly those who took a role in leading last week. As I was being sick at 2 a.m. in the morning, I thought, well, I'm not going to be at church tomorrow morning. It'll be fine. People will just pick it up and go with it. And that's exactly what happened. And I got to listen to it. Peter sent me through the audio of the service. And I just felt so encouraged. I was kind of led in bed, you know, recovering and drinking lots of water. And listening to people share their stories of how God is at work in their lives and how God has called them to be in the places where they are. And also to hear Malcolm and Helen and Sarah sharing that vision of how we gather together on a Sunday morning as church. But actually, we're church all the week through, out there, wherever God has placed us. And it just felt so good to hear that this isn't kind of my vision and something that I'm doing. This is a church thing. This is something that God is doing. This is God's vision. And I just felt so encouraged. So I wanted to thank you and share that with you, and particularly those who shared about their context so openly and honestly. It was great to hear that, and I was really encouraged by last week, so I hope you were too. So we're in the middle of this theme. We kind of took a break from it last week, although it all ties in, about the lordship of God, or the lordship of Christ, the fact that Jesus is Lord, and what does that mean for us? And so, and this week we're looking at this passage from Isaiah, and just Paul's saying it's his favourite passage. And when I read it, I mean, I'm familiar with it. I'm familiar with the story, and the images are very strong, aren't they? Very striking images within this passage. You know, the lips and the seraphim, and it's all larger than life, and also very intimate. But it really struck me this time when I read this passage just how these few verses contain like a mini version of the whole story of God and us. And that's what I want to explore and expound this morning with kind of five sections that are quite clear. Well, certainly when I read it this time around, I thought, oh, that's just so clear. The way that God is at work in the world, the great story, the meta-narrative of how God is at work in human beings, and that relationship, which of course the Bible is all about, that relationship between God and human beings and the significance of that. So what I'd like to do is kind of talk you through the passage step by step. So the first part is all about God's holiness or God's glory. And it begins in the year King Uzziah died. So it's placing it in a particular time, a particular place, because things are about to get really strange. But Isaiah wants to know this is something that happened in the real here and now, in the real life. So this was in the year that King Uzziah died. This actually happened in a, I saw the Lord. So he sees a vision. And it says, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, which are types of angels, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. So we're automatically taken into something which is very strange. You know, this isn't normal. He's told us that this happened at a particular time. It's, you know, just another year happening in the life of the world. But this is a very unusual thing that's happening, and it's striking. And the thing we're to take from this is that it is awesome. Not in the way that teenagers say, oh yeah, this new phone is awesome. Like, awesome as in full of awe. This is, you know, the trail of the robes and the angels with all these weird wings. And, you know, the thing we're to take from it is that this is what it's like when you encounter God's glory. In fact, this is only something of what it's like, because he's trying to describe the indescribable. It's so awesome and so amazing. And God is where he is high and lifted up. That's important, that he is high and lifted up. He's on his throne and he's in those robes. And it's about his glory and his majesty and his splendor. And then he goes on, and they were calling to one another, the angels were calling to one another, and this is what they were saying. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. So it's not just, oh yeah, by the way, God is holy. No, it's holy, holy, holy. Three times, you need to understand this. God is holy, and we know that because he is above. Holiness means to be separate. Particularly separate from sin, separate from contamination, separate from anything that is bad or dirty. To be holy means to be separate. So holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. And then it says the whole earth is full of his glory. So this is not that there's kind of a little deity who's very holy and kind of kept separate. No, this God, his glory fills the whole earth. It's not contained in your sort of religious compartment when you go into your little temple or your little shrine. This God's glory fills the whole of the earth. It fills everything. And then he goes on. At the sound of their voices, the doorsteps and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. So it shakes and affects everything, even the physical things, the physical temple. And there's smoke in the air. There's that sense that it's filling everything. So this is the picture that he starts to paint, and it's all about God's glory and God's holiness. And then Isaiah responds to this. And how does he respond? Well, he responds with terror and fear and with assuming that death is going to follow. So he doesn't respond and think, oh, this is great, God's glory. He thinks, oh, this, I'm done for. He says, I'm done for, or I'm undone, as the old passage says it. I'm undone. Woe to me, he cried. I am ruined. I am undone. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. Isaiah knows that nobody can look upon God's glory and survive. You can't survive it. It's too glorious, it's too awesome, it's too different from our sinfulness. To be holy is to be separate, especially separate from sin and evil. So this awareness of God's holiness brings an awareness of Isaiah's, of our own sinfulness. When you see God's holiness, that's fantastic, but it makes you realize how unholy we are. So his response is, I'm done for. It's over for me. That's his conclusion. Me and my sin cannot survive in the light of God's holiness. I'm done for. The sin and corruption is focused on his lips. You notice he says, I am one of unclean lips. Because Isaiah is a prophet. So he is to speak for God. And yet he thinks, well, I can't do this. I'm one of unclean lips. And I'm among a people of unclean lips. We are unclean people. So I cannot survive. But then something happens. Just when Isaiah assumes that death is going to be the thing that's to come, something else happens. God moves towards Isaiah. God moves, and what he does is he takes away guilt and he atones for sin.
says, Then one of the seraphim, one of the angels, flew to me with live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar, and with it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, your sin atoned for." So God now acts. God moves towards Isaiah. Isaiah has seen God's holiness and glory, and as a consequence, he's become very aware of his own sinfulness and unworthiness. So Isaiah knows that he can never reach that holiness. He's glimpsed it, and he's thought, that is just far too much for me. Not only can I not reach it, it's actually, I can't survive seeing that amount of holiness and glory. Because he knows that holy means to be separate from sin. So he will have to be separate from God. That's Isaiah's conclusion, is that man and God cannot be together because God is far too holy. But God moves towards Isaiah with a live coal. It's heat from the altar. Heat and fire is to do with purifying. So this is a process of purifying, refining. And of course that leads to holiness, to cleanliness. So this touches Isaiah's lips, the place that Isaiah is to declare, that he declares as unclean, sinful. And the holiness and purity that's represented in this live coal is connected with the place of sin. See, Isaiah says, "I am one of unclean lips." And God responds by coming exactly to that place of uncleanliness. He deals exactly with the point of sin, and he comes to it. And God moves towards him because Isaiah cannot move towards God. It says that it takes away, it deals with the problem of sin, and that the sin is atoned for. And we've talked before about the fact that atonement, if you break up the word, it means at-one-ment. So to be atoned means to be made one again. So Isaiah's been aware of the separateness of God and man because of sin. And yet here, God is moving towards man and reconciling and bringing together, atoning, making one. So with it, he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin is atoned for." And what we see here in this story in the Old Testament is that this is the story of Jesus. And this is our story, isn't it? God is holy. And we are separated from God because of his holiness. So it's wonderful that he's holy. We rejoice in that. But actually the problem with his holiness is that we cannot be with him. Because we are not holy. We are not high above. We are not, you know, on a throne with robes. We're down here on earth getting on with life, messing up, making mistakes. We are aware of how brutal and hard the world is, and we're aware of that within ourselves as well. We're aware of that pain and that darkness. And so that's the problem, is that there's that separation. But of course, Jesus comes to us, doesn't he? The story of Jesus. God is holy. We're separate from God because of his holiness. We cannot reach God. We cannot reach up to there. So instead, God comes to us. God reaches down to us. Just as the coal comes and reaches onto Isaiah's lips, Jesus comes and enters into our everyday world. To be holy means to be set apart, especially from sin. And yet in Jesus we find, what's one of his titles? He's the friend of sinners. He moves towards the sin. So the definition is broken because holy means to be separate. And yet here we have the holiness of God in human flesh, this very thing which we think is unholy. Jesus enters into the human world, and he doesn't stay away from sin. He moves towards it. Just as the coal moves towards the lips, Jesus moves towards the point of sin, and he comes with his holiness, and he transforms it. Just as that coal transforms Isaiah's lips, so Jesus transforms the whole of humanity, the whole of the created order, by bringing his holiness to the point of sin. He comes to our world, and he doesn't just observe a world of sin. He enters into it. The pain of sin is inflicted directly onto Jesus. Think about it. He's betrayed by his friends. He's misunderstood by his family. He's verbally abused. He's physically abused. And then he's put to death. So he doesn't just come and say, "Oh, look, there's sin here, but it's okay, I'm holy." The sin actually pierces his skin. The sin actually whips him on the back, not just in a kind of spiritual, metaphorical way, in a literal way. The worst of sin is done to him. Physically in his body. He takes it upon himself because he's having to deal with it. He's the Holy One who can come close to us, intimate, to touch our lips to the point of sin and bring his holiness. And it looks, when Jesus is on the cross and all this sin and pain is being inflicted on him, it looks like a defeat. it looks like this should have never happened, that Jesus should have never come. Because, of course, what happens in a sinful world is that sin wins. And it looks like, when he's on the cross, it looks like it's won. Because he's in the place of the most amount of shame. There's a song by Don McLean, a lovely song, which is about Van Gogh. It's called Vincent. You probably know it. It's a beautiful song. It's got a line in it that says, "I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you." And of course, it's about how Vincent takes his own life. And how he's an artist, and this is the idea that, you know, the artists are very sensitive people, and the world is a very cruel place, you know, so artists are very vulnerable, they put themselves out there with their art, and they see the world differently perhaps than other people, with a real kind of open heart. And actually, this world is no place for them. So often artists, you know, suffer from mental health problems, and, you know, suicidal thoughts, and all those kind of things, because they're sensitive souls. And this is depicted in this song and said, "I could have told you this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you." And we could perhaps think about that in terms of Jesus. Jesus is God in human flesh. He doesn't belong here, perhaps, because, you know, he's love and he's purity, and yet he comes to this world, and of course the inevitable happens is that evil overtakes him. You know, he comes right into the middle of political and religious upheaval in the place in the world that even today is so full of pain and conflict. That's where he goes. And of course, he suffers all that pain. But actually, you know, you might want to say, you could have said to Jesus, "Well, if you do come to earth, don't go to Jerusalem. You know, go somewhere now, go to Devon or something and stay in a little cottage. You know, keep yourself away from this sinful world." But Jesus knows that that's not his story, that's not his path. It's a message for us as well, isn't it? That we might think, oh, the thing to do is to keep ourselves away from this sinful world. If we just hide away as Christians, that's what we should do. That's not what God calls, that's not where God calls us to be, is it? He calls us to go towards the world, to enter into it and to make a difference. That's the model he shows us. See, in this passage, Jesus is the coal that God takes and he touches our lips with it. He comes to our humanity and he brings it. Because Jesus may seem like he is fragile because he's so pure and holy, but actually he's not fragile. Because what we see, of course, is that the cross isn't the end of the story. That he takes into himself the pain and the sin of the world and he defeats it and he overcomes it. And that's our story. That's why we're here on a Sunday morning, is because Sunday is Resurrection Day. And our hope is in that resurrection, that Jesus walked from the tomb alive, in fact, more alive than anyone had ever been before, and said, "This is going to be the way. You're going to have this life too." There is hope. There is light. The next part is that God calls and God sends. See, it doesn't just stop there with God sorting out the problem of our sin. Sometimes we reduce the gospel to that. We say, "Well, what's the gospel?" Well, the gospel is that Jesus died for our sin so we can be made holy, so we can be made right with God. Great. But actually, that's not the end of the gospel, because he didn't just save us so that we could kind of feel nice and be made clean. He saved us for a purpose. It's for a reason. It's so that we can do something. So God then calls us in this passage. It says, "Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send and who will go for us?'" Now, Isaiah's just been through this amazing experience. God doesn't say, "Right, now you have to go." But of course, the question is loaded, because Isaiah's just seen, he's seen God's glory, and then he's seen his own sinfulness. He's been on this roller coaster, and then he's thought, "Well, this is it, I'm going to die, I can't survive." And then God moves towards him and touches his lips, and he's redeemed, and he's set right. And then God asks this question, "Right, who's going to go for me? Who can I send?" And of course, Isaiah says, "Me." Because when we're aware what God has done for us, when we see God's holiness, our sinfulness, and then we recognize that we are forgiven, we are set free, our response is, "Oh, I suppose I better kind of, you know, get on a rota at church, or I better do something now." It's like, "No, I want to give my life to this now, everything." Not because I kind of grudgingly should, or because I need to earn God's approval, or earn God's forgiveness, or earn the approval of people at church. I do it because I'm forgiven, I'm free. How else would I respond? So Isaiah says, "Here I am, send me." And it's not because he's kind of, "Oh, I'm amazing." It's out of humility. You think that humility is saying, "Oh, well, I can't do that, not me." But no, this is different. Humility is recognizing, "I can do this because of what God has done for me. Not because I'm amazing, but because God has forgiven me and set me free. Because he's touched my lips. He's come towards me when I couldn't get towards him. So yes, here I am. Send me. And I think it's a real affirmation as well of the place that we're in, like we were talking about last week, the place where we are Monday to Saturday. An affirmation that here I am, in this place. So often, I think Christians, particularly younger Christians, say, oh, where is God sending me? Where does God want me to be? The answer is, God wants you to be right where you are now, in the context you are now, in the job, in the house, wherever you are now. If he wants you to move, he'll tell you. But otherwise, he wants you to be where you are. Here I am. Send me. So the sending isn't necessarily going to another place. The sending is a sense of call exactly where you are now, in the people that are around you, your neighbours, the people you see throughout the week. And so this is the final point, which is the response. Here I am, send me. He responds positively. And the question is, are we going to respond positively? To do this, we need to become more aware of God's holiness, just as Isaiah was given that picture. Become more aware of God's holiness. And we do this through worship. One way that I've found recently helpful to kind of capture some of God's holiness is in silent prayer. I've never really done much silent prayer before. I think I've always been quite chatty in my prayers. I've said, God, this, da, 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 da. Or I've had written prayers. You know, that's kind of the Anglican way of doing it. So it's lots of words. And recently, I've discovered just sitting and being in God's presence. And I can't do it for very long because I've only just started doing it. So I can only do it for a few minutes before my mind kind of wanders. But to just sit. And actually, for me, that's really connecting me with God's holiness, because it's not about kind of my theology or things that I want God to do or things that I'm worried about. It is being in God's presence. And there's something about doing that that brings you into God's holiness. So I'd recommend that. Silent prayer is one of those ways to do that. But of course, the more we learn about God and the more we spend time with him and with his people, the more we become aware of God's holiness. So these 5 points, God's holiness, our sinfulness, God moving towards us, he instigates it, and then he calls and he sends, and he asks us to respond. God has moved towards you in the person of Jesus. He has come towards you, and he has said, I want to forgive your sin. I want to make you right with me, so that I can then send you, so I can use you in the place where you are. And God says, whom shall I send? And he wants us to respond, here I am, send me. A life lived for God is what we are all made for. It's what we're designed to do. So in it we will discover freedom. In it we will discover hope and purpose. It won't be easy. It might not always make us happy. But it will give us purpose and meaning. And that's what we're made for. Amen.